9/11 attack. He talks really movingly about his little brother and not knowing what's happened to him and feeling like there is no resolution. And then, of course, your weekly political analysis too. David Spears and Claire Armstrong coming up. News time now. It's 7 o'clock.
ABC News. Good morning, I'm Simon Lauder. Israel and the United States are discussing potential attacks on Iran after Iran damaged Israeli military sites in a large missile barrage earlier this week. Middle East correspondent Eric Dwarczyk reports.
The Pentagon says it's discussing Israel's planned retaliation to Iran's missile strikes with its close ally. Israel says it's considering a range of options. One reported possibility is a strike on Iran's oil export terminals. Iran says its strikes were self-defense after Israel violated its sovereignty and killed some of its military officers. It says it's prepared to defend itself against any Israeli retaliation. The United Nations and aid groups say further escalation has to be avoided at all costs, particularly as Israel pushes deeper into Lebanon and continues bombing Beirut and Gaza.
US President Joe Biden says he is discussing with Israel the possibility of attacking Iran's oil facilities. The comment immediately caused the price of crude oil to rise by 5%. Iran is the world's seventh largest oil producer. The Palestinian Health Ministry says at least 14 people have been killed in an Israeli strike on the Tulkarm refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. Earlier, the Israeli military said it had conducted a strike on Tulkarm without elaborating. Violence has surged in the West Bank since the start of the Israel-Gaza war last October. The Melbourne Symphony Orchestra says it's reviewing court documents filed by pianist Jason Gillam after he launched legal action over a cancelled concert. Costa Haritos reports.
Jason Gillam's performance was cancelled in August because he dedicated a piece of new music to journalists killed in Gaza. The pianist has since launched legal action against the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra in the federal court. He says he had been silenced by the MSO's decision and his legal battle is about defending freedom of speech. Days after making its decision, the orchestra said it had made a mistake. Musicians then expressed a vote of no confidence in the managing director, who later resigned. The Melbourne Symphony Orchestra has since committed to an independent review into its decision to cancel Mr. Gillam's concert.
New South Wales Police says it will work with pro-Palestinian rally organisers to ensure the community is kept safe during protest action this weekend. Chantelle Alcoury reports.
New South Wales Police withdrew a Supreme Court application after it attempted to block a pro-Palestinian rally and vigil from going ahead on October 6 and 7, citing safety concerns. The Palestine Action Group has held 51 consecutive weeks of protest action with limited police intervention. Organisers have since updated the route and location for the October 6 rally to begin from Hyde Park rather than Town Hall. A vigil planned for October 7 will also go ahead. New South Wales Police says it will work with organisers to conduct a high-visibility policing operation to ensure community safety.
A private coal mining company has been accused of illegally proceeding with a mine over koala habitat. Here's National Environment reporter Michael Slezak.
2 years ago, Vitronite applied for federal approval to build a coal mine over existing koala habitat in central Queensland. It's yet to be approved, but the ABC can reveal the company has already built an open-cut mine there. Vitronite told the ABC the coal pit is primarily for testing, that it's not the same project awaiting federal approval and is too small to require separate approval. Lawyer Dunya Jacobs from Environmental Justice Australia thinks that's wrong.
It makes a mockery of our environment laws to assert that a test pit constructed at the same site as a coal pit that's undergoing federal assessment is somehow an unrelated and separate project.
The Federal Environment Department is investigating the allegations.
The New South Wales and federal energy ministers say their disappointed energy company Origin has pulled investment for a hydrogen project in Newcastle. Bridget Murphy reports.
Origin announced yesterday it was backing out of the $207 million partnership with Orica that aimed to develop a hydrogen hub at Kooragang Island. The company cited the slow development of the hydrogen market as its main reason. A spokesperson for New South Wales Energy Minister Penny Sharp says it's disappointing to hear the project proponents have not been able to progress the Hunter Valley Hub, but the government will continue to support two other hubs in New South Wales. Federal Energy Minister Chris Bowen says the move is disappointing for workers and businesses and says the government will support Orica in the venture.
This is ABC News. Returning overseas, a hospital fire in Taiwan is under investigation after rescues were hampered during Typhoon Kraton, which has since been downgraded to a tropical storm. East Asia correspondent Kathleen Calderwood has more.
A fire broke out at a hospital in Pingdong in southern Taiwan as the typhoon approached the island. Around 140 emergency services personnel were sent to the scene, but it took several hours to extinguish the fire and 9 people died. Nearly 180,000 homes lost power in Taiwan, around half of which were in the southwestern city of Kaohsiung, where the typhoon made landfall on Thursday. Kaohsiung has been hit with torrential rain and severe flooding, and it and several other counties will close schools and workplaces for a third day in a row.
In the United States, the death toll from Hurricane Helene has risen to at least 200 as rescuers continue to search for survivors from the storm. Helene came ashore in northern Florida last week before carving a path of destruction through the southeast of the US. It's the deadliest hurricane to hit the mainland since Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Hundreds of people are reported to be missing and nearly a million homes are still without power nearly a week after the storm made landfall. Back home in Queensland's Premier and Opposition Leader have faced off in the first of 3 debates to take place during the state election campaign. Rebecca Higham has the details.
Stephen Miles and David Crisafulli shared some fiery exchanges during last night's debate broadcast on Channel 9, covering issues including housing, crime, health, infrastructure and Brisbane Olympic venues. Trading barbs over infrastructure cost blowouts, Mr Crisafulli said Labor ministers should be sacked, prompting a swipe from Mr Miles about the LNP's policy costings.
Ministerial accountability is important to me.
So you've got $16 billion of unfunded commitments. Well, you should sack yourself.
Premier, you know it's
16.2.
There'll be 2 more televised debates ahead of Election Day on the 26th of October.
A new survey has found the vast majority of parents in New South Wales support age limits for children on social media. Murray Olds reports.
More than 21,000 people responded to a month-long Have Your Say survey about internet access and social media use. 90% support age restrictions, most suggesting 16's the best age at which to take the brakes off. The government says the survey found 70% of children from 10 to 12 are already using social media. That increases with age, but there's growing concern about the time young people are spending online. 1 in 3 parents of young teens believe social media has a negative or very negative impact on their children. Young people are worried too. 2 out of 3 16 to 17 year olds say social media distracts them from schoolwork and family time.
A fishing lodge in Arnhem Land in the Northern Territory has described a crocodile attack on one of its employees as freakish. Rio Davis reports.
Fishing tour guide Sean Fumara was standing on a boat on the Woolen River on Wednesday when a more than 3 metre long croc jumped out of the water, latched onto his leg and pulled him into the water. He managed to pry the croc's jaws open and his clients pulled him out of the water as the croc lunged at him again. He was flown to Royal Darwin Hospital where he's received treatment for puncture wounds in his leg and ACL. In a statement, his employer, Dippery Lodge, said they're extremely grateful he's alive and said it's a sobering reminder of the risks of being in the habitat of crocodiles.
Now with sport, here's Daniela Intilli.
Retired Brisbane Lions forward Joe Danaher says he's very happy he was able to end his AFL career as part of a grand final winning team. The 30-year-old played 204 matches at Essendon and Brisbane, kicking 395 goals. Speaking at Brisbane's Best and Fairest Awards last night, Danaher says he's enjoyed his time at the Lions.
Letting me come here and have a kick and stuff up a bit on the field and get another kick and stuff it up again and then keep trying. But we got there in the end. To go out and get a premiership is what this club deserves, and I'm very happy to be a small part of it, so thank you all.
Melbourne has ended a four-game losing streak in the AFLW with a 16-point win over Greater Western Sydney at Prince's Park. The 36ers have secured their first victory of the NBL season with a 93-83 victory over South East Melbourne in Adelaide. And Bangladesh has won its first women's cricket T20 World Cup match in a decade, beating Scotland by 16 runs in the tournament opener in the UAE.
In finance, oil prices have risen after US President Joe Biden suggested US and Israeli officials are discussing a possible strike by Israel against Iranian oil facilities. Brent crude trading at $77.65 US a barrel. Wall Street stocks pulled back on the news. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has closed 0.4% lower. You're up to date with the latest ABC News.
Across Australia, you're listening to Breakfast on RN.
Good morning and welcome to AM. I'm Sally Sara, coming to you from Ngunnawal country in Canberra and acknowledging other custodians. Israel has told people living in large parts of southern Lebanon to leave as its land invasion advances. The Israeli military has also expanded its target area in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, leaving residents uncertain about where is safe. The Lebanese government says the death toll is rising. Middle East correspondent Eric Torchek reports from Beirut.
Volunteers clean up debris from an Israeli missile strike in the heart of Beirut. The whole area is residential, neighbour Mohammed Mansour says, and there's not even a tiny military base for Hezbollah. The Lebanese health ministry says 9 people were killed here when Israel destroyed a medical charity affiliated with the militant group Hezbollah. Mohammed Mansour says there was no justification for the strike. Here we have the civil defence office and 3 medical clinics, he says. This health clinic helps people in need with medication, with health services and donations for the poor that are not able to provide for themselves. Israeli strikes were initially concentrated in Beirut's southern suburb, known as Dahiyeh, where Hezbollah has much of its infrastructure and support base. But Israel is increasingly hitting targets in other parts of Beirut, terrifying residents who don't know if their street is safe. The United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator for Lebanon, Imran Riza, says civilians are suffering.
I think what we saw from September 23rd on is truly catastrophic. It's something that, you know, the people use the word unbelievable. The level of trauma, the level of fear amongst the population has been extreme.
Lebanon's health minister, Firas Abiad, says the death toll from the conflict is now approaching 2,000. So far, the total toll since the start of the attacks is 1,974 martyrs, including 127 children and 261 women, he says. Concerning the wounded, there are 9,384 so far, and these are those who are being treated. In southern Lebanon, where Israel's bombardment is much heavier, Hezbollah claims to have repelled the Israeli ground invasion in several villages. Israel says one soldier died in the fighting there. The Lebanese Red Cross says 4 of its paramedics and 1 soldier from the Lebanese Armed Forces, which is not fighting the Israelis, were killed in an Israeli strike while trying to reach wounded people in the south. From Beirut, this is Eric Twarczyk reporting for AM.
Pro-Palestine events will proceed in Sydney on Sunday and Monday, the one-year anniversary of the October 7th Hamas attacks on Israel, after New South Wales police and protesters reached a last-minute agreement outside of court. Police had applied to stop the assemblies on the basis of safety concerns, and a Supreme Court judge was listening to the closing arguments when the hearing was interrupted with the news of a compromise, as Rachel Hayter reports.
Celebration outside the Supreme Court of New South Wales after an 11th-hour compromise between the state's police and pro-Palestine protesters.
We had a very strong case and they didn't, and we were probably going to win anyway.
Joshua Lees is an organiser from the Palestine Action Group who'll protest in Sydney this Sunday for the 52nd week straight, opposing Israeli military action in the Middle East.
This is a good moment for democratic rights as well as for the fight for Palestinian liberation and to stop the war in Lebanon.
New South Wales police applied to stop this weekend's protest, arguing it couldn't be held safely. Assistant Commissioner Peter McKenna telling the Supreme Court, since the war has expanded to Lebanon, there's been a more aggressive feeling from the crowd. But organiser Amal Nasser says rallies have been held almost entirely peacefully for a year.
This is the largest and longest sustained anti-war movement since the Iraq War and potentially in all of Australian history.
Police also raised concerns the march route past the city's great synagogue would be too provocative on a weekend leading into the anniversary on Monday of the October 7 Hamas terrorist attack on Israel. The Executive Council of Australian Jewry declined to comment yesterday because it was marking Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. On Wednesday, the council's co-CEO, Alex Rivchen, appealed to protesters to abstain.
Show a shred of dignity, of humility, of shame. Leave this date alone. Let the good and decent people of this city mourn and reflect and commemorate on that day.
But Sunday's march will proceed with an altered route, and organisers agreeing that no flags, portraits or symbols connected to a prohibited terrorist organisation will be displayed. A pro-Palestine standing vigil will be held on Monday, October 7. Anastasia Radievska is a campaigner with the Australian Democracy Network, which advocates for the right to protest. She says the out-of-court agreement between protesters and police is a good sign.
It's definitely something to be proud of, that we live in a country where communities care enough about issues to engage in this kind of sustained protest, and that there is enough coming to the table from police in order to facilitate that.
But she says the legal action shows the right to protest in Australia is still very fragile.
That's Rachel Hayter reporting. Coming up on RN Breakfast, the brother of an Israeli hostage joins Patricia Karvelis to detail his family's year-long ordeal after the October 7 Hamas attack. You're listening to AM, where it's 16 minutes past 7. And for more news, you can download the ABC Listen app. A private coal mining company has been accused of proceeding with an open-cut mine and clearing nearly 50 hectares of koala habitat despite not having the required government approvals. The company denies the allegations, saying the approval wasn't needed for the work that's been done. Here's our National Environment reporter, Michael Slezak.
Across Queensland, koala populations have plummeted by more than 50% in two decades, and experts say mining has contributed to that loss. Here's ecologist Bill Ellis from the University of Queensland.
Whether it's just the clearing of the trees, the fragmenting of the habitat, or whether it's all of the traffic associated with the mine, and there's so many impacts that all come together and make it really quite a hostile environment for koalas.
To stop koalas disappearing, federal environment laws require any mine that is likely to have a significant impact on them to get approval from the Environment Minister before proceeding. But there's an open-cut mine being dug in Queensland's Bowen Basin over what used to be koala habitat that doesn't have any federal approval. Dave Copeman is director of the Queensland Conservation Council.
The company operating the mine and proposing the expansion has cleared over 47 hectares of koala habitat, and they've done so without federal approval. This is in spite of the fact that they're going through that approval process through the Environmental Protection Biodiversity Conservation Act.
The group behind the mine is the privately owned company Vitronite.
We do it the Vitronite way. We care about what we do, our people, the community.
In 2023, the company got approval from the Queensland government to build a new coal mine called the Vulcan South Coal Mine. It also applied for federal approval, but is still waiting on that to come through. But Vitronite has already dug an open-cut coal pit in a location indicated in that unapproved plan, cleared koala habitat indicated in it, and built a rock dump and other infrastructure.
This behaviour on its first instance appears to be illegal mining and illegal activity.
But the company says those actions aren't part of the work they're waiting on approval for. Vitronite's Chief Operating Officer Michael Callan said in an email statement,
"The Vulcan South project and the disturbance associated with that project has not and will not commence prior to receiving approval under the EPBC Act."
He says the mine Vitronite has built is a test mine for that project, and so it's not the same project.
"These activities are not part of the action and are not of a scale that require separate referral."
Lawyer Dania Jacobs is from Environment Justice Australia.
"Actually, there's a specific law that prohibits taking an action that is a component of a larger action that's awaiting a federal environmental approval."
The ABC understands the Federal Environment Department has launched an investigation into the allegations. Environment Minister Tanya Plibersek told the ABC she takes any breaches of environment law very seriously, but can't comment on the matter as it could jeopardise compliance action. Dr. Ellis worries what the mining will mean for koalas.
"Yeah, I really can't see why they wouldn't ensure that every element of that project is considered."
It's ecologist Dr. Bill Ellis from the University of Queensland, ending that report from Michael Slezak. Well, have you ever wondered why scammers seem to be able to time their fake Australia Post texts just as you're expecting a parcel? A new report has found detailed profiles of every person using the internet are regularly sold within the online advertising industry. And sometimes that information falls into the hands of criminals, giving them a good idea of when to hit you with a fake delivery notice or even a dodgy road toll bill. The ABC's national technology reporter Ange Lavoie-Pierre has the story.
"I was in my study at my home. My phone pinged and there was a text message."
In November 2022, David Niven received a text that millions of Australians would recognise.
"It said that your e-tag didn't work, that you have an outstanding toll. Hit the following link to avoid getting a fine."
As a consumer rights lawyer of almost 40 years, he was well aware of the road toll scam, but the timing was uncanny.
"I had travelled on a CityLink toll road within about a week or so of that date. It was the first time we'd travelled on CityLink for 3 to 4 years. So I was half expecting to get a contact from CityLink."
David had reservations but decided to follow the link to find out more. It drew him into a sophisticated fraud which convincingly mimicked a multi-factor authentication process, dispelling the last of his doubts.
"My suspicions had gone away. This had all gone exactly as it should go. So then it went and took me to what looked like the Commonwealth Bank."
He called the bank, but it wasn't to check if he'd been scammed. The consumer lawyer in him was outraged by what seemed like an inappropriately cosy relationship between two businesses.
"Eventually got through to a person, very helpful, who said, 'Oh no, that wasn't us, it's a link scam.'"
The bank cancelled the fraudulent transaction, and David's understandable, if somewhat misplaced, outrage had accidentally saved the day.
"Who would have thought there'd be a benefit in being an angry old man?"
2 years on, a new report by policy researchers Reset Tech says a little-known corner of the online advertising industry known as real-time bidding, or RTB, may have been to blame for the precise timing in David's case.
"I think RTB probably wasn't intended to become a surveillance behemoth."
Alice Dawkins is the group's executive director and the author of the report.
"It's a mechanism to sell ads. You can build very detailed profiles about people's preferences, habits, where they are across the day."
She says that same data can help scammers choose their timing carefully, making them all the more likely to succeed.
"We found data segments on people who are likely to have used a toll booth recently, as well as people who are likely to be expecting a parcel."
The ABC reported earlier this week that an investigation by the Irish Council of Civil Liberties found the RTB system also poses a national security risk by exposing personal information about senior officials to foreign intelligence organisations. But Alice Dawkins says the risk to the rest of Australia is just as real. She's calling for changes to the Privacy Act to rein in the online ad industry.
"I think it'd be great to see some commitments made by both parties before the next election."
The federal government is in the process of updating the Privacy Act, with a bill currently before Parliament. But changes to data privacy rules have been deferred for now, and no timeline has been announced.
That's Ange Lavoie-Pierre reporting. For years, WA's youth detention system has seen chaos, from riots and lockdowns to now two deaths in detention. For the first time, one of its insiders is breaking his silence, explaining how the system became so broken and what is needed to fix it. And a warning, this story discusses suicide and contains the name of an Indigenous person who has died. Kian Burke reports.
After dedicating most of his life to corrective services, Mike Reynolds was awarded the sector's highest honour, the Australian Corrections Medal. He received letters from multiple politicians thanking him for his service.
You've made us all proud to be Western Australians, and I congratulate you again on your success. Yours sincerely, Roger Cook, MLA, Premier of Western Australia.
But by the time he'd received the commendation, he'd already been sacked by the WA government, after 3 years as the Corrective Services Commissioner. On a personal level, the period was marked by cancer and extended time off. Professionally, it's remembered for chaos, with riots, extended rolling lockdowns, and the ultimate tragedy.
A 16-year-old Indigenous boy has died after self-harming in a problem-plagued youth detention unit inside an adult prison in Perth.
That boy was Cleveland Dodd, and in the days after his death, Mike Reynolds was sacked.
I'm blaming the government. If they don't give us the money, if they don't say we're going to change the face of youth justice in Western Australia, nothing changes.
It was under his watch that the Department of Justice was twice found to be breaking the state's own laws by locking up some of its most vulnerable children for up to 24 hours a day.
I don't think they had a great concern about youth at all. I don't think they had a concern about corrections at all. It was pure crisis mode. It was keep us out of the paper, keep us out of court, and try and keep everyone alive. And we obviously failed.
Former Corrective Services Minister Bill Johnston told the ABC Mike Reynolds' comments about the government's intentions were false and could not be substantiated. As for bringing about meaningful change, Mike Reynolds thinks it should start with moving the youth justice portfolio out of corrective services like every other state has done.
Western Australia are doing the same thing every day. They're not going to get a different result.
A WA government spokesperson responding on behalf of Premier Roger Cook and Minister Paul Papalia did not directly address Mike Reynolds' allegations. They said recent leadership changes had led to dramatic improvements in conditions and services inside WA's youth detention facilities, with young people spending more time out of their cells and participating in other programs. Former Premier Mark McGowan and the Justice Department declined to comment. Former Justice Department boss Adam Thomason did not respond to the ABC's questions.
That's Kian Burke reporting. And if this story has caused you any concern, you can call the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Crisis Support Line. That's 13 Yarn, that is 139276, or you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. Campaigning in the US presidential election is concentrated to a handful of battleground states. Alabama is not one of them. Donald Trump will win that state in November. In fact, most of the state has an effective one-party system. The ABC's US elections analyst Casey Briggs went to one of the most Republican counties in the US, in northern Alabama, to find out how politics works there.
Let's go, hi, mama!
At Cullman County's annual Sweet Tater Festival, there's plenty of food.
This is Philly steak.
Fun.
How country are you? Let's go!
Music.
Take a look at you.
And Donald Trump merch everywhere you look.
Trump is for America. He's not for himself.
It seemed like when he was in it 4 years ago, things were a lot better.
Have you seen how Democrats are nowadays?
The Bible is against homosexuality. And the Democrats are promoting it.
You won't find many Democrats here in Alabama. In fact, Joe Biden won less than 11% of the vote in this county 4 years ago. Lance Conn is chair of the Cullman Democrats.
My family went out to eat not too long ago, and somebody was leaving and kind of talking with us and made the statement of, well, you're a Trump man, right? And I said no. And it just boggled their mind that somebody here would say, no, I'm not voting for Trump.
Things are so dire for the Democrats, the party isn't even running candidates this year.
It's very difficult to find those people who are willing to put in the time and effort.
Local and state positions in this part of Alabama are effectively decided in the Republican primary in March. The Democrats may as well not show up. And Thomas Spencer from the Public Affairs Research Council of Alabama says many don't.
In Alabama, we have seen a drop in voter participation in elections, as elections have become less competitive. Since 2012, we've been regularly in the bottom 15 of states in voter turnout.
As American politics has grown more polarized, Professor Gabriel Lenz from the University of California says local elections have been getting less competitive.
We have more and more safe House districts where the chance that an incumbent will be voted out has just dropped and dropped and dropped. It is just very hard to unseat members of Congress who are out of touch with their district. And I think that's made members of government less knowledgeable, less informed about politics, generally less responsive to the individual concerns in their district.
Even some Republicans, like State Representative Corey Harbison, think that can be counterproductive, pushing people into their political camps.
These hot-button topics that everybody really talks about, they tend to never get solved, and that's either party.
With American politics as polarised as it is, coming together as a country is easier said than done.
That's Casey Briggs reporting there. In finance on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell nearly 0.5%. And that is AM. I'm Sally Sara. It's coming up to 7:30. And a very good morning to Patricia Carvelis.
Good morning, Sally. And good morning to you. You're listening to ABC Radio National Breakfast. The top stories we're following this morning. Israelis are marking the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, but many aren't celebrating. Shortly, I'll speak with Michael Levy. His brother, Orr, was taken by Hamas on October the 7th. We'll talk to him in a moment. And later this morning, we'll explore what community leaders are doing to try to de-escalate tensions within the Australian community. Dr. Jamal Rifi is my guest after 8 o'clock. First, Richard Crabtree's here with an update of the news headlines at 7:30. Hello, Richard.
Good morning, PK. Israel has issued more evacuation warnings for parts of southern Beirut as airstrikes continue this morning. At least 9 people died overnight in Lebanon's capital in a strike just a few hundred metres from its parliament and Western embassies. Israel Defence Forces said it's taken numerous steps to mitigate the risk of harming civilians as strikes continue. Elsewhere in Lebanon, the World Health Organization is calling for greater protection of its workers in the region. At least 28 health workers have been killed in the past day. One Israeli soldier has also been killed in on-ground fighting in South Lebanon. Oil prices jumped 5% overnight in response to the growing conflict in the Middle East. In a brief exchange with reporters, US President Joe Biden says he is discussing with Israel the possibility of attacking Iran's oil facilities. A